Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Audit Committee meeting for 13th March. If I could go around the room, please, introducing people. I'm Mike Ramsey, the Chair.
Kenneth Laurie, Chief Executive.
Alan Turpey, Monitoring Officer.
Joan Trent, Head of Children's Services, replacing Dr. Mary Smith.
Chris Lawson, Risk Manager.
Gary Fairley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support.
John Blair, Director of Resources.
Stephen Reid, the Appointed External Auditor.
Councillor Kenneth Baird.
Peter Duveng, I'm the non-voting external member of the Audit Committee. I'm also a financier.
Councillor Peter Smale.
Councillor Andrew Hardy.
Councillor Jim Muir, Head Deputy Leader.
Councillor Derek Milligan.
Jill Stacey, the Chief Internal Auditor.
Elaine Greaves, Principal Auditor.
Amber Ahmed, Internal Auditor.
Janet Ritchie, Democratic Services.
Well, thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is Order of Business. I have one extra item to add at the end of the agenda, which is private business for the Audit Committee to discuss self-assessment routines for the end of the year. Does anyone else have any last-minute items? Mr. Baird, Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. If we can, I'd like to add to the private an update on the current investigation into Fussy Bridge.
I believe that matter might be covered at the end of the meeting. Before moving on, I just wanted to make one mention. At the December meeting, I was quite surprised to see a number of members updating social media during the proceedings of the committee. I would not like to see that happen again, please. Any declarations of interest? In that case, minutes of the previous meeting. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Mr. Dvink.
Yeah. When I look at page 13 of 154, and as a motion, Councillor Smale, I just come back to what I really feel is so important, is that we have some time as the Audit Committee to do some thinking, because really we get bombarded by an enormous number of papers, but maybe we could do some really constructive time that we could help the council with the horrendous problems that they are faced with. So I would try and suggest that we really make time in the agenda to have some debate about how we can really improve the situation as it stands today.
Thank you. I think the idea of the extra item that I'm putting at the end of the agenda to discuss our self-assessment might give us the opportunity to discuss those issues, if you're happy with that. I just have two matters arising from the minutes. On page 6 of the minutes, Mr. Moffat agreed to look at security policy and access levels of the Revo system not according with Midlothian Council's information security policy. Do we have an update?
That work's in progress, being actioned by the service provider just now, and I can provide an update as to the date that will take place once I've got that finalised detail from the provider.
Do we know that the provider's specifications will meet both East Lothian and Mid Lothian's information security policy?
Yeah, the specific control that we're putting in place is that the system will only be accessible from council devices, and as such, all the security measures attached with council devices will apply, so that only those meeting the council device requirements will be able to access the system.
Thank you very much. The other matter, Mr. Blair, I think you were resolving who was going to take responsibility on item 5.8 of the December meetings. There was some debate as to who was going to resolve and take responsibility for one of the outstanding internal audit matters. Do you have a response?
I don't have an update for committee, but I'll take an action and expedite it prior to the next meeting, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Do we have a proposal that the minutes are a true reflection? Councillor Hardy? And a seconder? Councillor Milligan. Thank you very much. Move on to item 5, public reports. Financial strategy. A wealth of information there. Mr. Fairley.
Seconds, just get technology to do what it needs to do. Thanks, Chair. Item 5.1 on the agenda sets out, for all the committee's interest, the range of financial reports that have gone through Council in February, recognising the importance of the financial strategy to the Council's future financial sustainability. The first is the financial strategy itself, which was used to determine the revenue budget for 2018-19. And the report on the agenda sets out the various appendices to that report. And we've also included the motion that was approved by Council on the 13th, which set the budget. Also attached as part of the papers for Council's interest was the Treasury Management Strategy and Investment Strategy that was set alongside the budget, and also for completeness, the Financial Monitoring Report, so that's the in-year performance against revenue budget in 17-18, an update on the General Services Capital Plan, and also the Housing Revenue Account position. So those are the suite of financial reports that Council considered in full and reached agreement on the 13th of February. And as I say, in terms of the revenue budget itself, I refer you to the attachment, which is the paper that was approved by Council at the meeting on the 13th that set the budget. Happy to take any questions on the detail that is in there or expand on any points in the reports themselves.
Mr. Devine.
I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. Table 10, is that part of your remit? Because I look at that and I see that we are still being faced with a budget gap of some significance in years to come. And I see council tax increase of 3%. Is there any way that we could increase the council tax by a greater number than 3%? Or is it a diktat of the Scottish Government that it couldn't be any higher? And why should we accept that diktat if we are being faced with such enormous financial difficulties in the future? We should just ignore their advice.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, Chair, I met with the Cabinet Secretary, and at the time the Cabinet Secretary had informed us that there would be effectively a no-strings budget and there would be no penalties applied to the budgets. However, when the announcement came, it was very, very clear that there are no penalties applying to the budget if you accepted the budget that was on offer. And therefore, indeed there was, for want of a better word, strings attached to the budget. I then wrote to the Cabinet Secretary asking him to clarify, because quite frankly, it would have been a proposal for the Labour Group to increase council tax above 3%, or they certainly would have gave serious consideration to that, and especially to rather than take some of the decisions that we had to take. The letter back from the Cabinet Secretary was very, very clear that he expected us to either sign up to the full agreement, and that failure to sign up to the full agreement, which was including a 3% maximum rise, if we didn't sign up to that, then we would receive a very less favourable offer. And maybe the Chief Executive, I've got the wording wrong, but it did say a less favourable offer should we refuse to sign up to that. So in other words, it was a no-sanctions budget on condition you accepted it.
Thank you. Councillor Baird.
Thank you. There was one of the proposals that was put forward in discussing with education about it, the reduction in teacher numbers. Do we have it spelled out, and as Councillor Milligan alluded to there, do we have it spelled out by the by the government that proposal is acceptable?
Councillor Milligan?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, there's no reduction in any teacher numbers. In fact, there likely to be a growth in teacher numbers. If you looked at the start of the budget, you'll see part of the growth, the £44 million that reduced to just under £30 million, a budget gap. Part of that budget gap was around a £14 million increase in spending that we expected to have to meet for educational purposes. Therefore, that in real terms this year, the budget will rise in education from £87 million to just over £90 million, a 3.1% increase. So the reality is we're likely to have more teachers and more learning assistants, no less.
Councillor Baird on a follow-up, and then Councillor Mr Vink.
Thank you, Chair. Just refer the committee to page 34. Let's see, it's about halfway down the page. Education, 1.11, reduction in teacher numbers, 14 staff, full-time equivalent. There's a real number attached to that. Take on board that we will have more teachers because we're the fastest growing council, but that does state there that there's going to be less teachers than previously budgeted for. I just wonder if the ratios that's based on, if that has been agreed at cause the level that we are allowed to bring our ratio down. I understand that that ratio still won't put us as being the worst council, but I understand that there's some ambiguity within the national picture, whether those ratios can be met across all councils. In effect, if one council has a good ratio and one council has a bad ratio, it balances out the national average. But my understanding is that because I haven't actually got that down in writing yet, what's actually acceptable at the national level.
Councillor Milligan?
Yeah, I'm not sure what Councillor Baird means about budget for last year. Last year's budget for education was £87 million, just above. This year it's just above £90 million, so there's a stark rise of, I think, 2.7, and Gary Fairley, can correct me, for educational purposes. So there's a real-term rise of 3.1%. As far as I'm aware, the Cabinet Secretary is happy with what Midlothian Council have proposed, and therefore, if we're not meeting the teacher number ratios, we would have been subject to these sanctions that didn't exist. Perhaps the head of finance could tell me otherwise, but if we didn't meet the specifications set down by the Scottish Government, which require us to keep our teacher numbers as we're dictated to, then we would actually have a less favourable settlement, and we haven't got a less favourable settlement.
Mr Fairley?
If I can help clarify some of the facts, certainly within the budget was presented to Council on the 13th of February, and arriving at the budget shortfall, there was provision for demographic school role increases of £2.265 million. So that reflects principally that's additional teachers to deal with the increase in the growing population. In terms of the budget and the specific issue around people-teacher ratios, in the correspondence that came from the Cabinet Secretary around the grant settlement, and it's set out in the report, the Cabinet Secretary indicated in order to support delivery of commitments on teacher pupil ratios, government will work with COSLA to consider how the use of existing or additional data on unfilled posts and teacher vacancies could be better utilised to inform how delivery of this commitment is measured. I'm not aware that work has been done and there's been agreement on how the ratio will actually be measured. The point at which, under the current mechanism, my understanding is there is a census in September, and it's that point that the teachers in the classroom are measured to assess the pupil-teacher ratio in each council, and then that's amalgamated to look at whether across Scotland we're hitting that target. So there's a piece of work to be done to, one, how will it be measured, and then, two, it won't be measured until September, under the current method, it wouldn't be measured until September 2018, some time away. We've certainly gone back to the Cabinet Secretary and advised that Council set a budget which met the conditions that were set out in the various pieces of correspondence, if that helps.
Mr. De Vink.
Yeah. I'm deeply, deeply confused. On the appendix number 7, it says that the total funding is 201 million. And then these very wordy auditors, Ernst & Young, top of the rank auditors, tell me that the expenditure account is not 201, but 352 million. And I would really like to know what the difference really is, and can we have the same figures as the auditors give for the total expenditure of the council? Because if we are looking at 201 but it is really 352, we are being given the wrong figures. Thank you.
Mr. Fanning?
It's not that they're wrong figures, they're different figures, Mr. Deving. Within the audit committee papers, we set out as part of the motion passed by council the revenue budget summary, which looks at the net expenditure for each service, and that's what council was asked to approve, the net expenditure for each service, which arrives at a total net expenditure of 201.551 million. So that net expenditure is the net expenditure met from council tax and Scottish Government grant. Yes, within services there are specific grants and other sources of income that mean our gross expenditure is more than that. What we will be doing is publishing a more detailed budget book which lists the gross and net expenditure for each service. I'm happy to make sure that Mr. Devin gets a copy of that directly if it would help. That will give a much more detailed analysis of the budget service by service, which may find helpful.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe I am just used to the real world. And in the real world, you have two things. You have turnover, and then you can see what's really happening. The way we are looking at these figures, we are not looking at the real figures. And if you have another £150 million of figures that are somehow not included, that makes it very difficult to judge the situation. How can you really make sensible judgment? Also, if you're going to do that, and I really would welcome it, I would like to see the total figure that you use on the payroll, because that is a figure that is very important, and then at least you can start making comparisons.
Mr. Fanning.
Yeah, I think the detailed budget book that I talked about earlier will give you the answer to those questions, including the payroll costs overall and service by service.
Do we have any other questions on the financial information that we're presented with? In that case, thank you very much. Item 5.2 was Ahmed, I think you're presenting.
Thank you. This audit reviewed the controls in place over payments to suppliers through the accounts payable Integra system. During the audit, we focused on payments processed through the accounts payable system made in the 16-17 financial year. As the purchase-to-pay project is ongoing, there are currently different methods of processing orders and invoicing. A number of key controls were seen to be operating to manage the key risk, and those systemic failures were identified during the audit, which is positive for those involved at a time of significant change in system and processes in this area. As noted in the report, some weaknesses have been identified in the controls and improvements are possible. We have raised 1 high, 8 medium and 4 low-rated recommendations, which are detailed in the audit issues and management action plan in the report. Improvements have been made during the audit process through the completion of 15 of the 13 audit recommendations, in particular the recovery of duplicate payments from suppliers, and are expected to continue to improve, especially around management monitoring of the effectiveness of the controls. The audit committee is therefore invited to review the contents of the audit report and endorse the agreed audit recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have any questions, members? Councillor Smale.
Could I ask Gary how this report syncs with the proposals we heard about this morning regarding creditor settlements and invoices?
As Amber touched on, the report sort of straddles the implementation of the purchase-to-pay system, which is designed really, and what I articulated, performance and scrutiny committee, I suppose the journey we've been on is to move from a predominantly paper-based system to electronic purchase ordering, and also the next stage, the invoice approval process, to move away from bits of paper and signatures to the system having the controls inbuilt to pay the invoices. To give you a demonstration of the progress, I'm able to update, as we move towards the year-end, the management team on the orders that have been placed in the previous week at quite a level of detail to allow them to scrutinise the expenditure that is being committed. So we knew last week or the week before that we'd committed X tens or hundreds of thousands of pounds of expenditure, and we could drill that right down to the individual line. We could probably tell you how many pencils we ordered last week through the system within schools, etc. So that level of detail, rather than historically, it would have been we'd need to wait until all the invoices were paid and then do some analysis on them. The idea of that is to give us much greater control upstream on what we're committing and what we're ordering, and to make the whole payment process much more efficient and effective, so that we get on-contract spend, we get the best price, and we're able to make sure that we're only ordering what we really need to order. We'll welcome audit looking at the post-implementation, and indeed there's a piece of work going on around purchasing cards to give us some reassurance on that process. So I'm quite positive that, bearing in mind what's happened in other councils around payment processes and frauds, that this audit's highlighted some room for improvement, but it's not highlighted any fantastic risk exposure in terms of things that we really need to worry about. And I'm confident that the new system will improve the controls even further.
I just have a question around the setting up of suppliers on the system and the use of sundry creditors as a method for settlement. Is this being tightened up in your post-implementation review?
Yeah, absolutely. That's an area, even in the new system and process we're putting in, that we want to remove. So we're dealing, working through that and really closing that avenue down. And it helps strengthen the, you know, sundry suppliers were probably ones which aren't on the core Scotland Excel or other procurement frameworks we use. So it's definitely something we're pushing.
but we're trying to do it in a way which takes those people that have been using them with us rather than an edict of you will not use. It's trying to encourage people to engage with the changes, and so far we've been successful in doing that.
Councillor Baird.
Thank you. I just had a question about unrecoverable payments. What sort of amounts are we talking about there, and what kind of recourse do we have as a council for those suppliers that are unable to pay back accidental payments or duplicate payments?
As I understand it, 4.1 the report highlights we'd identified overpayments of £12,000. We've got all but £1,015 back. Bearing in mind that, and I was just looking earlier in the report, that as a percentage of the payments that we're making, that is minuscule. It really is. I think to strengthen the controls further than that area, we'd probably spend more than we potentially leak.
Do we have any other questions and comments? No, thank you. Next report is internal audit report about complaints. And when he takes his seat, Mr. Pavlovsky.
Sorry?
Are you going to present this report?
Yes.
This audit, which was carried out as part of the internal audit plan for 2017-18, reviewed the Council's policies, procedures and systems in place to support the Council's complaints process. Our audit identified that management implemented a number of systems, internal controls and procedures for complaints, and the strengths are highlighted in the audit report. A complaints framework with associated procedures and systems is in place to manage complaints, though some weaknesses have been identified in the controls, and improvements are required in certain parts of the Council to ensure compliance with the SPSO's model complaints framework. Areas of improvement include enhanced training and guidance for staff, standardised recording and reporting methodologies, performance monitoring to meet completion timescales, secure system access to ensure consistent practices across the Council services, and evidencing of lessons learned from the customer's feedback process. We have made 6 high, 17 medium, and 3 low-rated recommendations, which are detailed in the Management Action Plan in the Internal Audit Report, and have been accepted by management for implementation within reasonable timescales. The Audit Committee is invited to review the contents of the report and endorse agreed audit recommendations.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions? Mr. Devink.
On page 56 and of 154, I see that there are 5,799 complaints. Now, that strikes me as a stunningly large figure. Out of how many reported documents is that 5,799? And why would people complain to such an extent? It would be helpful to have that highlighted.
I'm not sure quite where to address that question. I suspect
I'm not sure what it means by reported documents. Could you clarify what you mean by out of reported documents?
If you have 5,799 complaints, you must have sent out, what is it, 1 million? Is it 100,000? I need to have a figure. It hangs completely empty. It strikes me as a crazy number of complaints to receive. I wonder what kind of business you're in.
Quite a number of those complaints are actually due to missed bin collections, and the requirement is that we have to record those, even though they're fixed almost immediately. And that actually, I'm not sure the exact figure, but there are a lot of those. And you can't say, I mean, how many bins are there in Midlothian? There's, do you know, have an idea of the figure, how many it was for bins?
Oh, what's it, about 40,000 households, about three bins. 120.
If it's 45,000 households, that's still an enormous large figure. You know, it's almost 12%. So something somewhere is going wrong.
Mr. Laurie, then Councillor Bedd.
Yeah, we had a report that came to the Cabinet and the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee relatively recently, which set out an analysis of all the complaints that were received. And colleagues may be able to advise of the precise figure, but the point being made is that a very significant percentage was about missed bins, and these are recorded. The comment that came back from members, certainly at Performance Review and Scrutiny, was that in compared to the number of collections we're making a year, which I think runs into the several millions. But John may be able to expand. It's not a huge percentage, but John, do you want to say something just about the numbers?
Yep, in terms of waste collections, and this is live information because of the snow disruption. So last week, in the 5 days we were out of action, we missed in excess of 90,000 bins and boxes over 5 days. So if you extrapolate that over a year, there's about 4.7 million collections across Midlothian per annum. So even if it's 5,000 out, 4.6, 4.7 million is pretty minuscule. And also, as Elaine indicated, people get a missed bin, whether they've not put it out or there's roadworks, that gets logged as a complaint. So I think the numbers in terms of waste collection are pretty minuscule. And we do learn from the trends coming through from the complaints record.
That's enormously helpful, because then at least you now know exactly what it is. But reading that figure of 5,799 complaints, I started thinking, you know, is that normal or abnormal?
In my previous life as a banker, complaints were defined as any expression of dissatisfaction, whether they had any grounds or not. And I suspect in this sense, a lot of these complaints are just comments that are dealt with quite quickly. Councillor Baird.
It was just to confirm that's exactly the conversation we had at PRS, was that what you got in the report was the hard kind of number of how many complaints we'd had, but without the context of what it was actually in reference to. So that was the issue for us, is that it was almost a red herring, that we were like, oh my God, I can't believe how many complaints we're getting. But no, in the context of, was it over 4 million bin collections, it's infinitesimal. And it's almost, it doesn't reflect the good work that the council does. And that actually just leads me neatly onto the bit I was going to say about this complaints report. And like I talked about in PRS today, is that it is key that our complaints are put into context for staff and customers, so that they can, or residents, sorry, that they can see that there is a lot of good work there, and we're not just looking at we're not looking at the wrong numbers, and we're making sure that staff can see that they're doing good work. There was a big concern within PRS about the five day turnaround period. It's not necessarily accurate as to how quickly things are actually dealt with, because we're still not sure if it takes in term time or not. It's just making sure that when we are talking about complaints, because obviously this document is public, that we're putting it into context so that anybody reading it does see that the council is doing a lot of good work, and that is actually a small number, even though in black and white it is a big number.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, I think we can echo that. I think the complaints will have doubled by this time next year, with everybody who's complained about not having their road gridded. So we'd imagine that'll have went up the way. And probably the reality here is what's actually registered as a complaint rather than a problem. If you've not put your bin out, the guys can't pick it up. If somebody puts a car in the wrong place and they can't get the vehicle along it, then the reality is there's very little they can do about that. However, I think it is about what we register as complaints regarding what is a real complaint and what's actually a query, whether that be roadworks or not. The question I have is I'm just noticing the target dates right through to people. They're either a 30 through the 6th 18 or the 30 through the 12th 18. And it seems quite strange that some of the areas marked as high have got a year-ending target date, where areas marked as medium have got a mid-year target date. Are they going to be refreshed day target dates, or is somebody just taking a broad brush and saying that's when we will have it done for?
The ones with the 31st December target date, that reflects that the some of those recommendations are related to the a review of the way that recording is actually happening at the moment, which is quite a complex recommendation. And it also reflects the fact that there's going to be a new CRM system coming in, and that'll be linking in with that. That's not coming in until later in the year. So that's the reason some of those have a calendar year-end target date.
Councillor Hardy, I think you had a question.
Yeah, thank you very much. Without wanting to stray too much back onto the actual hard data of the complaints, I mean, it does seem that we are kind of talking about them in the context of 5,000 versus 4.5 million collections. But, I mean, I think we could have done with perhaps some better context. Whether is this 5,000 households having a complaint once, or is it the same 100 households having 50 complaints?
I suspect that's something the answer to which will be, well, the new CRM system will help us get more detailed information on, but...
What we can say is there was actually quite, I think as Kenneth actually said earlier, there was an annual report on complaints that went to Cabinet in December, and that provided quite a lot of the analysis you're looking for, which is why we've not duplicated it in this report.
Thank you. Any other questions? In that case, we move on to 5.4, the risk management update. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Chair. The risk management report for quarter three provides an update of the highest rated risks facing the Council at a strategic level during quarter three. Highest rated issues are highlighted in section 2.6, and these were financial stability at the time, the change programme and welfare reform. Now, following the budget decision by Council on the 13th of December, the financial stability issue has been reassessed as medium risk as a result of the Council setting and achieving a balanced budget position for 2018-19. 2.7 of the report sets out the strategic risks, so these are risks in the future facing the Council at quarter three, and the highest rated of these were the Council being the fastest growing Council, Scottish Abuse Inquiry, Historic Abuse Claims Project, balancing the budget in future years, given what we've heard about in the financial strategy for future years, the change programme, review of pay and grading, and climate change. While much of the report looks at the potential negative risks and issues facing the Council, 2.8 of the report identifies strategic opportunities, the most prominent of these being growing Council and other strategic opportunities such as Shawfair, Borders Rail, Easter Bush and City Deal. Appendix 1 of the report provides the strategic risk profile for the Council and details each of the risks facing the Council at a strategic level in more detail, describing the current risk and the current control measures, as well as any specific actions being taken to address the risks identified in the report.
Thank you. Any questions? Councillor Smale.
Yes, I draw your attention to the bottom of page 78, item 2.74, review of pay and grading. The Councillor has asked for some numerical outturn for this policy of increasing hourly rates in exchange for more flexibility on overtime working. We were expecting those at the tail end of last year. We still haven't seen any. I just wondered what the timescale is for the analysis to be done as to whether this investment of £2.67 million has actually had the expected return.
Mr. Blair.
Thanks, Chair. In response to Councillor Smale's question, we have been working on metrics relating to our low pay. We've been developing them as a management team, and we're ready to come forward in the next few months with trends over the last since October 16th, so the information will be is available. We've got another payroll run. I suggest we'll let the year-end run through, then we'll share it with councillors.
So we'll see this by June?
Undoubtedly.
I have a question on the fastest growing council. It's rated as critical as an opportunity, but only high as a threat. Is there a reason for the mismatch?
So the risk focuses in the risk register twice. So it's highlighted as a risk-facing organisation given the demands on resources that it's placing. There's demands both facing the council and partner organisations. We've seen pressures in the integrated joint board, for example, that has a knock-on impact with council services. So it's rated as having a medium risk for the organisation from a risk perspective, but as an opportunity, there's great opportunity comes to the council arising from it being the fastest growing council, with the opportunity for the council in the longer term to invest higher levels of council tax through higher housing populations and the like.
Don't want to move too far ahead, but I notice the Ernst & Young audit plan mentions financial stability as an increased risk and an area of audit focus. I expect that your risk report and the Ernst & Young audit plan were done separately and haven't been coordinated yet.
The risk register that we've compiled internally has been compiled independently of the work that Ernst & Young carry out, but the risk rating that we've attached to financial stability at the moment reflects the position that the Council finds itself in. The financial stability risk had been rated higher through the year, but as the confidence increased with the gap shortening to achieve a balanced budget, and then with the Council managing to achieve a balanced budget on the 13th of February, the decision was taken that we should reassess that risk on that basis from an issue perspective.
And we don't need to carry any residual risk forward on that on the basis that the balanced budget that has been set represents a significant cut in expenditure from the previous year's outturn?
So the balancing budget in future years still remains as a strategic risk. So this is for future years, and that's still sitting as a high risk within the report. So the way the report's split, I suppose, we have issues that are facing the organisation right now, and that was the challenge that we had to achieve a balanced budget for 2018-19. And given that the Council's set a balanced budget, we're more comfortable with that position now. But with the outlook being that there's a potential budget gap in future years, the balance in the budget in future years remains as a high risk at the moment.
Thank you. Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. The one thing that kind of popped out at me on this risk assessment was that the decision to leave the EU is marked as a medium risk. And I wonder that now we've had both the Scottish Government and the UK Government's impact assessments on what's likely to happen, and judging by what all the parties have said, it's likely we'll see a cut in GDP of like 9%. I just wonder if you could like talk me through the thought process on that being as a medium risk when we could see a kind of a huge compression on income.
I suppose we're operating in a position at the moment where there's still a substantial lack of clarity on the direct impact that the decision to leave the UK, the EU, will have on Scotland and the budgets here. As that information develops through the negotiation process, I expect the detail that's been published will become clearer, and as we start to see what the final deal's looking like in the latter stages, I think we'll be able to estimate the impact on the organisation more clearly. But I'm aware that there have been reports produced for Council previously, and I've referred to them in previous risk management reports, to alert people to the changes and potential impacts that there could be to external funding models for the council and so on. And certainly one of the big impacts could be employability of foreign nationals.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. In that case, the Midlothian Council Annual Audit Plan. Mr. Reid.
Thank you, Chair. This plan comes to the committee today to summarise and provide an update to members on our planned approach to the second year of our external audit of the Council. Clearly, while we present the plan today, our approach to the audit will continue to evolve throughout the remaining months until we eventually sign the opinion on the financial statements in late September. Members will recall that our responsibilities as the appointed auditor falls into two main areas, one in respect of the financial statements and the other in respect of our responsibilities around the wider scope audit dimensions, public sector audit. And I intend, just in terms of highlighting a few matters to members, to focus on the executive summary of my report in covering pages 107 and 108. Very happy to take questions in addition to that. I set out there the materiality for the audit of the Council with a planning materiality of £4 million and a tolerable error of £2 million with any, and this is perhaps the one of the most important numbers, so any adjusted or unadjusted differences of £200,000 over £200,000 will be reported to the Audit Committee via my annual audit report in September. The £4 million and then the £2 million are important numbers in terms of setting a base for the work and the thresholds for our testing and the testing of transactions. And that's not to say we'll be testing transactions only at £2 million. Clearly, that's not the case. We'll be working to a much lower individual testing threshold depending on the assessed risk. Page 108, Chair, summarises the key areas of audit focus at the current time in respect to the financial statements, firstly, so focusing on the recognition of revenue and expenditure and the risk of management override due to fraud or error. In all audits, those are presumed significant risks, and the Council is no different, so they're not a reflection here of Midlothian Council. Rather, they are, under auditing standards, treated as significant risks and fraud risks, respectively, and we'll remain alert to those as we undertake our work. Clearly, property, plant and equipment is a significant number on the balance sheet of the Council, and we've identified that again as an inherent risk this year, together with pension liability valuation. And we've had some discussions here in the past around how very small changes in the assumptions for the local government pension scheme can have a material impact in terms of the size of any potential liability on the balance sheet. There are two new risks in relation to the financial statements audit this year that I draw to the committee's attention. One in relation to the preparation of the financial statements, and that's reflecting the fact that last year there were a number of material errors identified which were adjusted prior to the finalisation of the financial statements, and we need to take that into account in risk assessing this year's audit. And similarly, in relation to the new Battle Centre, there's some debate in terms of which financial year it will actually fall into, but clearly if it's an issue that's concluded by the 31st of March, then given it's a public-private partnership and the complexities around the model, we'll be looking to support the audit work there with the use of one of my colleagues who's a specialist in that area. In relation to the wider scope audit dimensions, there are two key areas of focus, which I'm hoping won't come as any surprise to members of the committee, and those are around financial sustainability and financial management, and those are the areas that we'll focus, have the primary focus on in terms of our wider responsibilities as part of this year's audit, given the financial challenges facing the authority. I also set out a broad timeline within the appendices and, together with confirmation of my independence, and again just under auditing standards, draw that to the committee's attention that I am independent and therefore I can act as the external auditor. Chair, I'm very happy to pause there and very happy also to take any questions.
Mr. De Vink.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. When I first read your 1.3, I circled it and said it's wrong because 4 million out of 200,000 is 2%. But then I went further on and I found your figure of 352,000. To 352 million. And that is what I'm trying to get this council to understand. We have to have one form of figure that we work with. And I'm really looking forward to receiving this booklet from Mr. Gary Fairley in due course so that I can really understand exactly what is being done. And it's very helpful to have those figures from you.
Councillor Smale.
Yes, we did have, as you know, quite a lot of difficulty with the draft accounts this year, partly, I think, pressure because the FRS 102 accounting standards meant that there had to be a radical revaluation of our asset base, and that caused problems, I think, to other public sector bodies at the time. Looking forward, however, my concern about the PPP contract is that my understanding is that PPP charges are not a matter of the capital account, where capital values can be quite subjective and actually operationally not very important to the council. PPP payments go against the general account, so if there's an error of interpretation there, it could severely affect the council's freedom of movement in terms of its revenue account next year. Am I right or am I wrong, or is the answer much more complicated than that?
The revenue implications of the contract should be, in terms of hitting the general fund, should be less risky, because we know it's a matter of fact, no matter the contract, what physically we pay to the provider in terms of cash or the provision of the asset and any service charges associated with that. And we know what we're getting in terms of support from government. The accounting entries, it'll be a bit more challenging. We'll be making sure we've got the right asset on the balance sheet, because the asset does go on the balance sheet, valued that, and then also articulate in the balance sheet the correct the related figure for the future liabilities. So the balance sheet will have an asset and future liabilities under the contract, and the revenue account will get hit with the depreciation and the accounting entries that unravel that. But in terms of the, once we've done all the statutory mitigation, effectively what's hitting general fund and met from council tax and Scottish Government grant is the physical cash that's going out the door to the provider, less the money that's coming in from government to pay that specific contract. That's a very high-level overview, but hopefully that gives you some reassurance.
Mr. Reid.
Sorry, just to build on that, the important point in terms of the year one of the PPP, so the new PPP coming on balance sheet and then the revenue consequences, is much of the accounting is driven by the financial model that sits behind that, both in terms of the revenue side but also the asset value. And therefore, once it's established in year one in terms of the accounting entries, but also the underlying assumptions within the model, then those will be rolled forward on an annual basis. So always as an auditor, there's a need to have a degree of increased focus on year one with focus in subsequent years, because you're establishing a precedent for the accounting transactions and also the base numbers.
Councillor Smale.
Yeah, the description is pretty much as I understood it. I think the issue is a timing one. Are we talking about bringing forward the point at which we have to recognise the expenditure, or actually do we have the opportunity to put it back?
From my perspective, the point at which we will have to recognise it in our accounts will be determined by the completion of the contract. I think it's scheduled for this at the 29th of March, so it's right on the year end. We've had 5 days or so of pretty horrendous weather for the building industry. So I think my expectation, if it's not already confirmed, is that the project will slip into commencement in financial year 18-19 and therefore be 12 months before
Stephen and the team need to do the full-blown work in terms of recognising it in the accounts.
Thank you. Mr. Reid, the audit plan talks of a number of elements which we're about to hear from the internal audit team. They're also addressing, and I realise that both the internal audit plan and your audit plan were developed, if you like, side by side, but not necessarily with the benefit of close liaison. As the Ernst & Young plan develops, presumably it will be liaison with the internal audit team so that there's no gaps between your respective coverage of audit matters and... Can you comment?
Thank you, Chair. I've already had a couple of meetings with the new Chief Internal Auditor in terms of just sharing knowledge and information about the Council, but also providing and discussing some thoughts in terms of areas of focus based on some of the commentary that I made last year in my first annual audit report. We take a substantive approach to the audit, so we take a focus on transactions and testing transactions based on relative assessment of risk in relation to those transaction classes. We don't take a controls-based approach to the audit, but nonetheless we do take into account, in terms of our assessment over the overall control framework of the authority, the results of internal audit work, and including, for example, some of the areas today around accounts payable. We'll take that into account in framing our risk assessment for the substantive work that we would perform in those areas. So, you know, I can provide that reassurance that we are having those discussions, and particularly if and when there are any specific investigations, which again I'm particularly interested in as an external auditor, that internal audit are involved in, we'll be liaising appropriately in that respect.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. So we come on to the internal audit charter. Mrs. Stacey.
Thank you, Chair. The proposed internal audit charter, it's been developed in conformance with the public sector internal audit standards, SIAS, and it's presented for consideration and approval by the audit committee today. The terms of reference, essentially, the charter for the internal audit function was last presented to the audit committee for approval on the 10th of May 2016. We've updated the previous charter to ensure that it only includes specific details to ensure conformance with the requirements of the SIAS. The report, covering report, presents a background to the development of the internal audit charter and its contents to ensure conformance. And essentially, the internal audit charter, the what aspect should be considered alongside the internal audit strategy and plan for 2018-19, which is included later on the committee agenda. And those documents set out my strategy as the Chief Internal Auditor for the how we actually discharge the role and provide the necessary annual assurance question opinions. So the Audit Committee is therefore asked to approve the proposed Internal Audit Charter, which is Appendix 1, in order to provide the mandate for Internal Audit Function to fulfil its remit. Happy to take any particular questions about the content of the Charter or any other aspect.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Councillor Smale.
A very high-level one. To what extent has the code changed since we looked at this about a year ago? What new emphases are there in it?
It's actually been reduced quite considerably to only focus on the very specific elements of the what aspects. There's some other aspects that were in the previous internal audit charter inter-audit charter that was really more about the how, which I've now included in the strategy document, which is the approach of how we're actually going to deliver and fulfil our terms of reference. So I think generally in terms of content, not a huge amount of change, just very specific about here's our remit in the charter.
Thank you. If there's no other questions, can I ask the members to propose approval of the charter? Councillor Hardy, and seconded Councillor Baird. So that's approved. Thank you very much. Mr. Stacey, you're still on for the internal audit strategy and annual plan.
Thank you, Chair. So as previously mentioned, these are then the documents that set out, A, in terms of the strategy on our internal audit approach for the next year's audit work, which is at Appendix 1, and also relating to the specific pieces of identified work that we'll deliver as part of the audit plan for 2018-19, which is in Appendix 2. These again have been prepared in accordance with the public sector internal audit standards, and they do require approval by this committee. A fundamental role of the internal audit function is to provide senior management and this audit committee, and essentially its governance role as the board relevant to each organisation. So not only are we providing internal audit services to Midlothian Council, we also provide the services to the Midlothian Health and Social Care Integration Joint Board. And for each of those organisations, our requirement is to provide independent and objective assurance so that we can add value and improve the organisation's operation through its kind of governance and discharging the obligations of each individual organisation. In addition, the Chief Internal Auditor is required to prepare an internal audit annual opinion on the adequacy of each organisation's overall control environment, and that's one of the things that is in particular is set out in the strategy to ensure that all of the things and the pieces of work that are in Appendix 2 within the plan that will enable sufficient coverage of the organisation's operations to provide that opinion. The report itself, in terms of the covering report, presents the background to the internal audit strategy, outlines the strategic direction for internal audit to provide our independent and objective assurance on the systems of internal internal control, on risk management and the governance in order to fill our internal audit charter, which you've now just approved. The report presents a background to the audit planning process, and the proposed internal audit plan for 18-19 sets out the range and the breadth of audit areas and sufficient work, as I'd mentioned, within the audit programme of work to prepare the annual audit opinion. Key components of the audit planning process include a clear understanding of the organisation's functions, associated risks and the assurance framework. But, however, I must say that the plan is also sufficiently flexible to reflect the changing risks and priorities pertaining to each organisation. Any changes relating to an audit plan would necessarily come back to this board for any significant changes. But also mention that within the plan and within the covering report and the strategy, we've set out the resources that are assumed to be available to deliver the internal audit function. The audit committee is asked to approve the proposed internal audit strategy, which is Appendix 1, and the internal audit plan for 2018-19 on Appendix 2. And I'm happy to answer any specific questions about the audit planning process any aspects in terms of risk and some of the areas of coverage within the proposed audit plan.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Mr. De Vink.
Appendix 1, page 145 and 147. You're somewhere I read, and I can't find it just now, that you effectively have just over 1,000 man hours available to do your job. And I thought that was really cutting things very, very dramatically low. And if I look under 6.5, that you have 21% of available days. And I got really a bit lost when you talked about how many people you have, with half of one person and three quarters of another person. It really is quite difficult to really get a good feel about it. But the feel that I got was that you're really under-resourced for something as important as this. Would you like to comment?
So within the audit strategies, so page 146, 154, so in paragraph 6.1, it sets out the internal audit resources that are available. It reflects the shared arrangement in terms of the chief internal auditor resource here, but it also reflects that we have a budgeted position where part of that resource will remain uncommitted, and those are assumed to be available audit days. So in total we have a total resource of 5.72, so that's for the internal audit plan as well as the counter fraud plan, which is another element as part of the overarching internal audit plan overall, and it's a total of 1,007 audit days. So from that perspective, and with the audit coverage, from my perspective, I feel as if the audit coverage does cover the significant risks at a strategic level relating to the organisation. Some of the examples within there around the workforce strategy and plans. As mentioned in a previous agenda item, it's a significant cost for Midlothian Council in terms of its staff resources, and in particular when there's a lot of change and transformation happening, it's really important that the internal audit looks at the workforce strategy that goes along side the change and transformation strategy. That's a key strand. The Delivering Excellence Programme is another strategic risk facing the organisation, and an opportunity as well. So there are some pieces of work in there that really recognise some of the more strategic risks facing the organisation. And hopefully with the range and breadth of coverage within the proposed plan will enable me to provide the required internal audit opinion on the governance and risk management and internal control framework operating within the council and a separate plan for the integration joint board.
You feel that you're not under-resourced? I want to get it plain, because in, you know, reading this, I really feel you're under-resourced and you haven't responded to that.
We're in a position where, I mean, I'm still quite new in role, and we know that we're looking at some of the planned work relating to 17-18, where for a number of reasons we're behind plan. I have confidence in terms of the resources that are stated in the paper. We can deliver that range of breadth of audit work during 2018-19. and of a, that's of a sufficient level, both at the strategic level and some of the more routine transactional business processes. It gives you those sort of range of activities, and we require that in order to provide the internal audit opinion to you as an audit committee. In terms of resources, we're like an every other service within a council. We recognise that the public sector funding, you know, is diminishing. We need to look at a risk basis to our audit report. If we had more resource, we would do more audit work. Whether or not it would then go into some of the more medium to low risk areas, and whether or not that would add value to the organisation is again a question around risk and control and assurance. But from my perspective, I think we've got the resources, assuming that we continue to have those resources that are stated in the strategy and the covering report and the coverage within the plan, that we can provide assurance on some of the more strategic and more significant risks facing Midlothian Council.
Thank you. Mr. Lloyd, did you want to come in?
Yeah, just very briefly, it was only at the last meeting that we put this new arrangement in place for audit working with Scottish Borders Council. That was after a thorough review. We did think that, in fact, in many ways, the partnership with Scottish Borders Council opened up new opportunities. But we've also, of course, committed to review the arrangement, I think after 1 year, and we kind of take a view at that stage about the resources available and if that's sufficient to do the task that's required. So it's something that we will look to again on the basis of how things progress during the current year. It is a very new arrangement, but I think we're all positive about what's coming out of that at this stage.
Thank you. I just have one question, just again on resources. Have all the necessary changes been approved following the December decision to set up this new arrangement?
We're still working through with our HR colleagues on formalising the support role that enables me to do my shared chief auditor role, which is the principal internal auditor role. We've got some interim arrangements in place at the moment. We just need to go through the formal evaluation process with HR, and I'm hoping that the those will conclude within a few weeks, hopefully.
Thank you. You sound hopeful. Is there anyone who can comment that that's definitely going to be sorted out?
It can be sorted out, and that's as much an instruction as a comment.
Thank you. Mr. Devine.
Yeah, I'm bemused. If you have a decision in December to do something that HR in March, half of March, hasn't got it done, surely that's wrong.
I take comfort from Mr. Lorry's comment that it will be done. Do we have any other questions about the internal audit plan and strategy? In which case, again, just to give the Chief Internal Auditor her mandate for the coming year, could I have someone propose and second the work? Councillor Smale proposes, Councillor Baird seconds. That's approved, thank you. That concludes the public section of the meeting. We now move to